Welcome to Down to Dunk. I'm your host, Andrew Schlecht. We're part of the Athletic Podcast Network. Today is the last day, the very last day. At midnight tonight, you will no longer be able to get the $1 for 12 months to the Athletic. It's our Black Friday deal / Cyber Monday deal. It's the best deal you'll get all year. If you're curious about the Athletic, it's an easy way to check it out. It's $1. Just a dollar. Come on. Easy way to support. And you can support our podcast too. theathletic.com/downtodunk. You can also listen to the show without ads, which is a great way to listen to the show, I think. And with me today, as always on Monday, is Michele Barra. Michele, what's up?
Well, this week I started a new diet with my wife. Oh. We only eat vegetables. And so if I say something very stupid or I get angry, I will blame the food. This is only for a week, but I'm already in need of, I don't know, carbs, meat, fish, whatever.
Yeah. Only vegetables. Wow.
Yes.
You know, watermelon is a vegetable.
Like no peas, like no beans.
No beans.
You know, no beans. No. What just fruit and greens and like not too many carrots and potatoes. That is, I don't know.
What are you talking? Like, what are you eating then? It sounds like you're eating nothing.
What are you exactly. Eating? Water mainly.
Wow. Oh no. Have you heard much about what's going on in Oklahoma, Michele, with regards to the football teams?
Yes, I heard that something very crazy happened, that like no one leaves Oklahoma football, but like the coach of OU left. Is that right?
Yeah, he's gone. It's big news. Big news here. You got any ideas for replacements? Alex Spears is one to know.
Oh, me?
Yeah, you.
Like I have no idea. I probably can't name another NCAA football coach.
Yeah.
Or maybe the one of OSU, but I don't think that will work.
Yeah, no, that won't work. It's not going to work. Oh man, as an Oklahoma State alumni, I can't get enough of these stories. It's been just maybe the best college football weekend in my life. And just, you know, it's just been fun. Speaking of college sports, the Gonzaga Bulldogs faced off against the Duke Blue Devils over the weekend. And one fascinating great game that those two played. The Blue Devils won 84-81. But even more exciting is that you get Chet versus Paolo. And boy, was it a fun matchup between those two. So I thought it'd be a good time to kind of break down both of those guys. I'm sure a lot of you guys that listen to this are familiar with both of them, but I thought we could just kind of break down their games a little bit and discuss what they can and can't do, how they would fit with OKC, all of that. So let's start with the number one pick, which will presumably be the number one pick unless something changes. Paolo mm-hmm. Banchero from Duke. He's a forward. He is crazy strong, crazy skilled, and kind of showcased all of that against Gonzaga.
Yeah, to be honest, like full disclaimer, I watched probably 30 minutes of Paolo and 2.5 games of Chet. So for me, it's very early. But let's discuss that first half against Gonzaga. Because, I mean, when you see a player dominating in that way, against legit defense, because Chet was guarding him for the beginning of that first half. Then he had a few fouls, so decided to sit him, which I don't know. I have my theories about fouls in the NCAA, but anyway. Like the fact that he was comfortable in taking pull-ups from two, from three, the three ball was either from the dribble or in some of the spot-up situation with range. I mean, if you have a 6'10 guy who is, as you mentioned, as strong as hell, he can really play all three levels, because even when he gets close to the basket, he seems very comfortable. Very comfortable using his body, his shoulders to finish at the rim. Mm-hmm. And then you see him like toying with the 3-point line in that way.
Yeah.
He was just like so confident. And if you want to find something wrong about Paolo is the defense. I mean, in that game, he was okay. He was just not putting too much attention into that. So to me, like, I even texted you, probably it was it Friday? Or I don't remember. I texted you, close your eyes for a second and imagine Paolo as your starting power forward. Like,
Friday,
can you imagine? He's such a natural fit for what OKC is doing.
Without a doubt.
Of course.
Yeah.
That would be crazy.
Yeah, because the Thunder lack like another like really good score is what they lack. Like they've got like the passing, the connected tissue players, like they're all ready to go. You have Giddy and JRE. You have Dort, who's becoming like a better connector as well. Shea is already that. And right now, Dort, and like let's be clear, like he's doing a really good job. But if Lu Dort is your second leading scorer, you have some making up to do in the scoring department.
Yeah,
you add a guy like Paolo to this kind of team, like boom, like Dort's your third scorer or your fourth scorer now, depending on how Giddy develops, and you give Josh somebody like a real legitimate target, like cutting, and like the fit would be seamless. You could put him next to JRE, both like really strong guys. Neither of them are that big, but if you can get Paolo to commit to the defensive end, which if he plays for Mark, like you have to, like that's like you just have to. You don't. It's not a choice whether you commit on the defensive end or not. It's either you play or you don't. But you're going to commit to the defensive end. Then you're talking like real switchy. You can score from multiple places on the court. You still lack shooting. Like that's the only thing about that lineup where you're just like,
it depends. It depends. It depends on a few things, which is like if Giddy is your only real non-shooter.
Yeah. I mean, like, I understand that, but I mean, like, you lack somebody where it's like the ball swings to them and there's panic, for the defense.
Oh,
you
yes,
know
what I mean? But like, there will be.
The Thunder don't have that guy.
Not on the move. Not on the move. But, like, if you have, like, imagine, like, switching a guy that can shoot the basketball, even not, like, a premier shooter. Instead of Bazley, which like defenses are just not going to guard.
No,
shouldn't. That will change spacing dramatically because on Dort, they are already closing out. Yeah. They are not leaving him.
Yeah, no, they're not leaving him anymore. They're not going to leave him for long either.
Exactly.
However, they're not going to panic when it swings to him.
Yeah, but like, yes. Okay. I agree. If that is, yes, but it's enough to have two players on which you panic. And Shea and if it's Paolo, it's Paolo. They will panic when the ball swings and they are open.
Yeah. Yeah. Now I like what they're building. I enjoy watching this team. I mean, like I just flat out enjoy watching this Thunder team. And there's a lot that they lack, but you can feel this team is ready to have somebody plug in. You know, I've been thinking about Boston lately because like the way that Boston was set up is not dissimilar to the way that OKC is set up right now. You know, back in the day where it was like, oh, they have this like tons of picks coming. They've got these players, you know, these like really nice, like blue chip players. And like, all they need to do is like add just a few more pieces. And they never really developed like a system there. You know, they didn't have, like right now they have zero point guards, really. I mean, Schroeder is there, but Schroeder's not like a point guard. He's like a scoring guard.
Yes.
And then everybody else is like has very specific skills where it's, and the problem with Boston right now is like everybody plays very selfishly. Well, it's because they don't have anybody to really spray the ball around. And the Thunder have like multiple guys that I feel are ready to take that. And it's also why I look at this upcoming draft and think about how important it was that they drafted Giddy in this draft. Because let's say they drafted Kuminga and you head into the next draft and you got lucky and got the number one pick. talent through the roof. But do you have like a, man, do you have a sustainable like offensive identity with those guys? It just feels like if you had SGA, Kuminga, Dort, Banchero, it's like that fit is just weird, you know? Like it's,
it
doesn't feel cohesive. Now, perhaps that group that I just named could end up being the more talented group. Like there's a chance that happens, but you'd have to really try to figure it out to make it work. The fact that they got a lead guard in Giddey in this draft, and Vecini was talking on his pod about this, how there's really no lead guards in this next draft. Mm-hmm. And like the best lead guard is like, you have to kind of squint your eyes to see if it's a real lead guard. Like, I gotta think it's just so important that they did that because it helps shape the identity of what they want to be, you know? And it also, like to me, the more I think about it and the more I look at this team, they were never drafting Kuminga. Like that was never, I bet you that was never on the table.
No, I bet you the Book Knight thing was real.
No, there's no way they draft Book Knight. Like, there's just no way. Book Knight can't get off the bench in Charlotte.
Yeah.
I mean, there's just no, there is no way they were going to draft either one of those guys. I think that it was either going to be Giddey or Barnes or Mobley. That's what I think. Mm-hmm. I think it was going to be those guys.
Yeah, and they knew that that was an option on their table. They were, but even Suggs, I think that with Jalen Suggs, we have to wait. I know that has definitely been bad, but at least, I mean, he's maybe the ceiling. We are kind of seeing some, like, you can see it there. I mean, it's not far in the future. Like, he may not be, he may not end up being a scorer in this league, but still defensively, he has some tools and he still compete. So if you know that whoever drops between Giddey, Suggs, Barnes, and Mobley is fine with you,
then
no one else is need to be really in the discussion, right?
Yeah, I mean, their evaluation may have been, listen, like, we'd like to have Jalen Suggs, but the difference between Josh Giddey and Jalen Suggs to us is minuscule. So, like, we're not giving up two first-rounders to get Jalen Suggs. Like, we're not doing that. You know, maybe we'd give up one, and then the Magic are like, no way, we're not doing that. And it's like, okay, well, the choice is easy.
Yes. You know?
Now, the conversation with Toronto may have been different. Because there were even rumors on draft night that Thunder were trying to get a deal done with Toronto. And my guess is to get Scotty Barnes.
Yeah.
Like the difference between Giddey and Scotty Barnes, well, defensively, the difference is massive, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And offensively, they're very different players. But, you know, there's a lot more in Scotty Barnes' bag than we thought. And that matters. It matters a lot. Let's talk Chet a little bit, because I think the fit with Banchero is like seamless. One, he's a great scorer. He's a good passer. He can grab the ball and push. You know, that's something that we talk about a lot, is how they want guys that can just grab the ball off the rim and run with it. He can do that. He offensively, he's pretty much everything you would want out of a power forward, and hit step back threes. He can, you know, hit stuff off the dribble. He can do everything. So yeah, he's pretty easy number one pick there. Chet Holmgren is complicated in so many ways and exciting He's different. That's what's so hard about evaluating him. And the thing that I think about though when I watch both of them is like, you know who would fit next to both of those guys is JRE. Like he can fill the role of whatever the other guy can't. Now, maybe with Banchero, you wish that Jerry was like 3 inches taller, you know, to play with him.
And a little bit more of a shot blocker.
Yes. But
you just play a different kind. Like, it's not necessarily true that what Jerry is right now is future on the defensive end.
Without a doubt. Yeah.
So I'm not saying that he will necessarily grow 2 or 3 inches in the summer, but maybe he will leverage more about his athleticism, his timing. Like blocking shots is something important, but Draymond Green was never a lead
never.
in shot blocking, but he knows how to protect the rim. He knows how to put his body into the offensive layer in order to deter the shot.
Yep.
Like all those things. I mean, yes, Draymond had this mean demeanor from the beginning. He yeah. was going after your lunch every single time
yeah.
And dinner. Maybe JRE is not that, but I've seen him switch on James Harden and being mm-hmm. very, very effective.
Mm-hmm.
So you can build a successful defense that is switch heavy. Now, you really need to have someone that can be effective against a big guy.
Yeah.
And Draymond is. Like if you put Joel Embiid on Draymond Green, he will make him work the entire night.
Yeah.
He may win the one-on-one battle, but in the end, he would probably lose the game against Golden State. So if JRE reaches that level, then even if he's not a shot blocker, it can work anyway.
Yeah. Having Chet next to JRE, I mean, he could average 2.5 blocks a game. You know, like
yeah.
that could be a thing where it's kind of similar to like Perk and Serge in a different way, where like Perk was just like this like solid, like positional, like quarterbacking the defense. And then Serge was just kind of your like freelancer, you know, shot blocker, clean things
yeah.
up, you know, you funnel things to him. And Chet would be the same
yeah.
in the NBA for sure. Because
yeah, you used the right word there. Funneling, mm-hmm. Like that pick and roll defense between Thabo and Perk was special because they were able to basically take out all the options
yep.
besides getting at the rim
mm-hmm.
with a certain angle, and then Serge was there.
Mm-hmm.
Like that was a special defense, and right now probably the floor is a little bit more spread, so it's harder to do that. They used to cheat on the three pointers on the opposite corner way more than what they do.
Mm-hmm.
But still, you are right. Put a guy like JRE and a guy like Dort in a pick and roll defense, and have Chet just being there.
Yeah,
drop him or use him as a weak side defender, and yeah,
yeah.
That length is something. I mean,
and you can see
we're all scared
like
about
playing
the weight.
Jimmy, they kind of do that in Gonzaga mm-hmm. a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
yeah. And JRE, you can argue that JRE will be a better defender than Timmy for his entire life. So,
yeah.
No, Timmy's not horrible, but he's not a good defender.
Yeah,
if he were, like we were talking about, like a much better prospect.
Oh, without a doubt. Yeah. So. Chet, I mean, he's got it all, but the thickness, you know, he gets bodied by guys, and I know that like the stuff that sticks out to people is going to be, you know, Banchero going right at his chest and moving him and finishing, you know, with his right hand there at the rim.
Mm-hmm.
Like I think that probably sticks out in everybody's mind with regards to what are we going to do with regards to, you know, picking one or two. Like I think that. You could just show that clip and be like, okay, that settles it. You know, that's all I need to see. But the ceiling is so high with Chet. And if you believe in the development that can happen in Oklahoma City, like you have to be pretty tantalized with it because like the shot looks good. The timing on shot blocking is there.
Mm-hmm.
He's got a lot to clean up. Still defensively, he's got a lot to clean up. He leaves his feet way too much,
yeah.
Especially when closing out. Like he's got enough length where he doesn't have to jump every time.
No, you just raise your hand and you already make the contest.
But he jumps too much, and that's something you can clean up. Like that's something that you can teach. You know, there's a lot of teachable things within just his like core skills that I feel like can be taught. But he can score, and he can score off the dribble. He's great in transition, although the Thunder team doesn't get out in transition all that much. But like you can imagine, like Chet getting out on the break with Giddy, and it's like you're toast because those guys are mm-hmm. gonna score because Chet has length upon length upon length, and Chet is gonna play the power forward center position. You know, with Poku,
yes.
it's like more. A lot of, they get compared to each other because they're, you know,
skinny,
tall
and skinny
white guys. You know, like that's why they get compared. But Chet's a big, and Poku to me is still a wing. And
yes,
I mean, just having those guys out on the court together would just be hilarity. Like, it would just be
so crazy. So much length.
To see them. So much length. Like, and then they together weigh, you know, less than 400 pounds. You know, it's wild. 7-footers, less than 400 pounds combined, where like Shaq was like pushing that in his final years. You know, it's crazy.
Yeah. I was listening to the telecast, and I think Mike Schmitz at a certain point said that we had all the same discussions about Mobley, about he was too skinny. Will he be able to sustain contacts at the NBA level? I don't think that Mobley was that skinny.
I was gonna say, ever. He's not this skinny. He was skinny,
exactly.
Certainly, but not like
he was
this.
Skinny. And he's clearly extremely impactful at the NBA level, no matter what.
Yeah.
So for sure, if you are an elite shot blocker in college, and your timing is great, and your defensive instincts in terms of where to be, not just being just like the fact that he is jumpy is a problem, but is a correct like one that you can easily correct with reps. Mm-hmm. It's maybe because he wants to get blocks, which is something that a guy that he is born in 2002, is that right, or 2003?
Gosh, why does Sports Reference not have it?
Probably 2002.
I think that is right.
Yeah, I mean, you may want to get some blocks. It's nice. But if you understand, like, defense in space, which seems to be the case, then that link will do a lot.
May 1st, 2002.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, Chet's 15 pounds lighter than Mobley was. In college.
Yeah, which is not nothing.
No. I mean, look at Poku. Like, would we want Poku to have 15 pounds more? Like,
yeah. Yep.
Like, we'd take it. We would absolutely take it. Chet is a project, though. Like, Chet's, like, I think he's more ready than Poku was day one to come and play in the league. He's got, like, definable skills. You know, he's played high-level basketball for a really long time, Chet has. You know, he played on like some really good high school teams in Minneapolis with Jalen Suggs. You know, he's played with guys that are good for a long time. And Poku has very little experience playing with good players.
Yeah.
And on good teams and on high level teams. You know, just the competition in college basketball that Chet's getting this season, I think is going to be really good for him. I still think he's a very modern player. I think he will shoot the three. He hasn't shot it real well. He's not been very good off of spot-ups this year. But offensively, in every other way, like you go look at synergy, and it's excellent, 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 excellent.
And the three will come.
Yeah,
there is an history, and there are many things that you can doubt about Chet. Like, shooting was not one of them.
No, I don't know.
And hey, maybe it will take a while. But the motion seems fluid. I watched him play him against Wembanyama in U19 last summer, it was. Mm-hmm. And he was letting it fly with ease. So it's just a matter of like giving it time, and it will be there, I think. So I agree, he's a project, but nevertheless, I mean, you have someone that can probably impact the defense quite early in his career.
Yeah.
And...
Yeah,
so
I kind of part of me just like really hates the Poku comparison because I don't think it's fair to Chet, you know, in some ways.
So it's fair to Poku. Poku is great. What are you talking about?
Well, and here's the deal with Poku as well. Like, we just rush so quickly to what we want him to be.
Yeah.
Like the day we drafted him, it's funny because the day we drafted him, it's like, this is a project. That will take a long time to see it come to fruition. We're a little bit over the year mark from when the year that they drafted him, like a year away from it. And people are like already just want to be like, well, what's going on? Like, why isn't he playing more minutes? I mean, if you were to on draft night say, hey, listen, in his second year, he's playing off the bench. He's playing about 15-ish minutes off the bench. And contributing, and he's learning, and he's getting better. I think on draft night, we'd be like, cool, that's great. That sounds like good progress for him. But we look at it now and we're like, man, like, why isn't he playing more? Like, he should be starting, should be doing this. Like, this should be happening for him. But when the Thunder signed up to take Poku, it was like, he's going to be a long-term project. He's, you know, he's 2 years away from being 2 years away kind of thing. And, you know, I do think he's making progress and we're seeing that with him, but he's, I think we need to give him more time without a doubt. Hey.
Yeah, I agree. And to me, one of the issues that I discussed it with John, and I probably will talk a little bit more about that in one of the next question of the days and stuff like that, is I think that putting him in a box is wrong, but giving him playing time with guys that are clearly better than him, would, I think it's helpful for him. It would be helpful to see, well, look, you can be the starting power forward if you hit your threes, you play good defense, and you freestyle a little bit. Mm-hmm. And I think that there is, I mean, I don't think he would be bad in that role because he is a quick trigger three. So he could work perfectly with Giddy and Shea. Now, if he keeps being like a sub 30%, it doesn't really matter. But I think that if you give him clean shots and you play him more into a system where you have better guys around him, I think that could work.
Yeah, I think so too. Yeah, I think absolutely. I don't know that we'll see it this season. Mm-hmm. I just don't know that we will, because I do think they, and as long as Bazley's on the team, I think they will continue to give it to him, because I do think that they like the way he competes on defense, mm-hmm. and they like the way that he holds up against bigger players on defense, mm-hmm. and strength-wise, I think Poku is not where they want him to be yet. Mm-hmm. And I think that they want to bring that on slowly, which is okay. I mean, Poku is really a thread the needle type of situation where it's like, if we don't do this correctly, it's, you know, he's going to be out of the league, you know, kind of thing.
Yeah. And I still will try to run him a little bit. Like, I threw the idea, okay, you don't want him to start, fine. That is okay. That is something that doesn't need to be there necessarily. But what if Bazley is the first guy that goes to the bench and you play 2-3 minutes of Shea, Giddy, Dort, Poku, and Jerry? Just 2-3 minutes. And then you start with your rotation, your usual rotation. You put back Bazley in, that he may get a longer run against the second unit guy, maybe with Mike Muscala, that can help giving him space. And hey, maybe the point is, if we do that, we will win more games. Therefore, we are not doing that. And that's completely fine. But to me, it makes sense to at least try to give Poku a little bit of run with Shea, Giddy, and Dort.
Yeah. No, I think so too. Also, just for selfishly, just for my viewing pleasure, I would like for that to happen.
Exactly. So. Mine too. I have to wake up very early to watch them, watch the Thunder. So please, coach, please make that happen.
Come on, Mark. If you're listening, Mark, please make this happen. All right. We're going to take a quick break and we will be right back.
I'm Trey Wingo. And I'm Kevin Frazier. We're teaming up on a new weekly sports podcast from Wondery, Alternate Routes.
As former SportsCenter anchors and current sports obsessives, we're consumed by all the what-if questions that make being a sports fan so excruciatingly fun.
If you're like us, then you also live and die on the fallout from every drop pass, busted draft pick, and game-changing play.
Or play call.
Intercepted at the goal line by Malcolm Butler.
Sorry, Marshawn, still too soon. Each week on Alternate Routes, we'll take a flashpoint in sports, break down what actually happened, then explore every alternate scenario and the ripple effects it would have caused.
Follow and listen to Alternate Routes on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts,
I mean, the possibilities are limitless, Kevin.
What if Portland drafted Michael Jordan?
What if the NBA never vetoed the Chris Paul trade to the Lakers? That's a butterfly effect for
real. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
And we're back from that quick break. Mikele, the Thunder, play the Rockets twice this week. And the Rockets are on a little streak of their own. I think they've won twice in a row.
Wow.
They're up to 3-16.
Fantastic.
Which is great to hear. A lot of that is because their star player, Jalen Green, is not in the lineup. Who could have ever thought that the Rockets would get better without Jalen Green in the lineup? And that's fine. Like, the truth is, like, it doesn't spell anything for Jalen Green's career, but a high usage rookie who doesn't have any clue what he's doing on defense and is not efficient at all, like, taking him away is going to help you. And yep. I think it's actually, like, pretty good timing for OKC to play this Houston team without him. I think he'll still be out this week. And hopefully they don't win both the games. You know, that's kind of
Be already a win. Like, going, split the difference, please.
Yeah,
like,
give me one-on-one with Houston. Like, win tonight, lose in OKC, or flip-flop that. I don't care. Like, let's just make it happen. Because that would be a big deal record-wise. Then they would be, I think, tied with Orlando, you know, and Detroit. Like, that's great. OKC's only won 6 games. They're currently in the reverse standings, are 6th. And they're only half a game back to San Antonio. They are 2.5 games back of New Orleans, Detroit, and then I think, like, almost 3 full games back of Orlando, Houston, which is, like, that's great. Like, they're where they're supposed to be. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they missed some time with SGA. Like, they lost all those games. Great.
Cool.
You know, they've lost 5 in a row. They're 3-7 in the last 10. You know, that's where they should be. And that's kind of the mix that they're going to be in all year. So I'm interested to see how they play against this particular schedule, though, because this could be, if they win both the games against Houston, like, that's interesting. They get Memphis in Memphis without Ja on Thursday. They have Detroit on Monday, and then they get Toronto the following Wednesday. We're talking three of those teams are below 500. Memphis is right at 500. It's like, this is a soft, really soft part of the schedule. And if they win 4 out of 5, or 3 out of 5, like, I mean, 3 out of 5 is not crazy. Like, it's not crazy to think they beat Houston twice and then win one of, like, Memphis, Detroit, Toronto. So this is kind of one of the bigger stretches for this team with regards to short-term planning. You know, this is you want to lose at least 3 of these games, if not 4, if not all 5. But I don't think they lose all 5.
No. No, I don't think I don't even think they will lose like 3 of them. It's hard. It's hard to lose playing
3 and 5, 3 and 3.
If they play, like they did against Utah and against the Wizards, well, they will go for
it. Here's the one thing, Michele. Here's the one thing is that they do
there's
not
no
have,
Kenrich.
There's no Kenrich Williams. And we are going to see the impact of Kenrich because he comes in and changes things. He changes energy.
Yeah, it depends. It depends who you're playing instead of Kenrich. If you play Ty Jerome, it's not the big of that big of a deal. If you play Théo Maledon like huge minutes, then yes, it will change.
Yeah.
So it's funny that today one of my friends, Italian friends, put up a picture in our WhatsApp chat about Kemba Walker being like in like first percentile of guys that are the worst in terms of plus minus on off rating at minus 27.2 point differential. I said, well, let's see how OKC does in this category. And my eyes were caught by Jalen Green, like minus 32.7, 0 percentile, like the worst of the worst at 550 possession. The offense is minus 23 points better when he sits. That seems irrational. The only player that managed to do worse is Facundo Campazzo and Jamichael Green, the happy reserve unit from Denver, which is giving nothing to their team. But hey, Jalen Green. Not good. Hey, maybe if the Houston's offense is 23 points per 100 possession better, then maybe they can split the difference.
Yeah, they could. And, you know, I mean, rookies just typically don't help. I mean, Josh Giddey, a minus 13.8 on the season. Like, yeah, that's what rookies do. They lose games.
Yes.
That's what young players do. JRE is a plus 1.4 on the season in 400 minutes. Like that's unusual.
Yeah, that's a cheat code.
It's unusual for them. Trey Mann, a minus 1. Even that, it's like, oh, okay. Well, that's not so bad. Like Poku is still bad, minus 3.2. Lou Dort, even, because the starting lineup has really struggled, minus 5.6. Bays, minus 10.4.
Yeah.
Faves is minus 12.1. Teo is the worst on the team, minus 17.6. But like those are like
nice.
Normal bad
playing
numbers,
more.
You know? Normal bad.
Yeah.
Kenrich plus 10.7 in 383 possessions. Like that's significant. He has led a lot of comebacks and has been in closing lineups in games that they've won. And so, I mean, it's going to be interesting to see him gone because like, does that mean more Aaron Wiggins? Like Aaron Wiggins in 103 minutes plus 15.5.
Yeah.
That won't continue. Like that number's too big for him to, for it
to
continue.
Are you sure, Andrew?
I honestly, when you say that, like, yes, I'm sure. One. Number two, I like Aaron Wiggins.
Yeah,
like,
me too.
He can defend. He's got good length. He's pretty smooth on the offensive end.
Yeah, he will shoot it. I'm positive.
Yeah, I like him. I think that he's got some juice to him that I think can help him to play. And also, it doesn't hurt him that he's wearing 21, which just makes you think of Andre Robertson. And then you see him out there defending on the wing, and you're like, man, like he can. And I don't know if it's the number 21 or the fact that he really can defend. You know, it's probably a little bit of both, but you're just, you know, there's some shades there. And then offensively, like he's no scrub. Like he can play.
No, he can play.
I'm a fan of him. I want to see more of him. I hope that's the outcome that we get. And also, like the fact is, like he will eventually probably be negative because rookies are negative. And I'd like to develop. I'd like to see them develop him for a little while because there is a chance that we don't see Kenrich for a little while.
I don't see anyone rushing him back.
One, they're not rushing him back. Two, the ankle sprain looked pretty brutal.
Yes.
So I think that we will see more of Wiggins. I hope that we get to see more Poku minutes. you know, experience with Darius Bazley, Point Bazley, you know, just do whatever you can. Yeah, Trey Mann. Like, I would like to see more Trey Mann and see what he can do, because he's competing on the defensive end to the best of his abilities, and he's starting to understand his spots in the offense.
Yeah.
Which I think is the thing that he wasn't doing at all when he was in summer league, and then to start the season and preseason, like, it was just like he didn't. Like, I would be like, I'd sit there and see him and see the window for him to get his pull up, and he just wouldn't do it. And I'm like, what?
Yeah,
like,
but how worried? How worried were you?
How I wasn't worried. I was just like, what's going on?
It's just a matter of time.
I was more confused than I was worried.
Yeah, yeah, confused. But I mean, sometimes you have to adjust. Yeah. You have to maybe feel it out before, like, getting into. And to be honest, I read that Mark was happy about 11 shots. Yes, yeah. But 11 is a tad too much.
Oh,
like a few, too a much. Few of those Kelly, seemed don't, a little bit
rushed. You're being a party pooper right there with that comment. You are just, come on, man. Like, give
yeah,
me,
to
give
me eight.
More.
Eight was a good number. Like, there were a few that. I mean, I'm glad that Mark said, "Well, I'm so happy." But after the 11th shot, he just benched him and never put him back there. So I'm sure that it was like a little bit the benching was a little bit broccoli, and then he gave him a skittle during the press conference, saying, "Well, I benched you because those were very bad shots, but I like the number 11."
Yeah, no, I'm glad, because it's showing that he's recognizing where his shots are.
Yeah,
and
yeah, that thing that he made off the dribble, like sending the defender, basically 5 feet away.
Yeah, he created crazy space, and like that's gonna be his skill, is like creating space, getting shots, and can he do that consistently? Can he do it effectively? Like, that's the question, and we haven't seen enough to be able to know.
I would love to see him moving around a little bit more off ball. Because this is something that Giddy and Shea already struggle. And also Lu Dort is struggling a bit in, like, moving without ball. They are getting better. They are trying. I wonder if Trey Mann can be that guy as well. I mean, the shot will be lethal. He is a very, very good shooter. You can tell. I mean, the motion is always the same. No matter how difficult it is, no matter how off balance he is, he's very good at that. Yeah. But I wonder, can he be the guy who also moves the defense by just, like, relocating, learn how to relocate? Because I don't think that he will be, like, I don't know, 20 minutes per game ball handling, like being the lead ball handler. So he needs to learn how to move around.
Yeah. Yeah, it's, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how he develops, because he's either like a bench role player, or he does what you're saying and he can start, like, be a starting level player. And then you also kind of question, because Mark said this in the press conference the other night, was that they drafted Giddy knowing that they had the point guard slot filled. You know, like, you basically bring in another point guard, and then, like, then you draft Trey Mann, and it's like, okay, kind of what's going on here. I think that they drafted him with the thought of him being like a scorer off the bench, you know?
Yeah.
Which I think, you know, you need those guys. Like, you need somebody that can come off the bench and give a lift to the offense and bend the
change
defense
of pace
a little bit. Yeah. And he's different. Like, he's a lot different than a lot of the other guys on the team. And it's an interesting prospect. This is it's an interesting team. They're a really fun team to watch. You know, I said that in the first half of the show. Like, I really have enjoyed watching them, you know, on a night-to-night basis and being around them. And I think that it's just a fun squad. And just the thought of having them, you know, grow, and the fact that Josh Giddy is this good too. You know, I don't feel like we can talk enough about him, because he really bends the defense with his passing. He is, you know, big enough on the defensive end to cover multiple players. He can really move his feet. I am beyond excited for what the future, you know, looks like for him, because if he does figure out the shooting stuff, then I do think that it's possible that he's, I don't know if he ever makes an all-star team, but I think that he's like, borderline all-star type of guy just because of what he can do on the court. And it, the shooting is a giant if. It's a really big one because everybody loves to compare him to Ricky Rubio. Like, Rubio never figured out a shot beyond a standstill three, you know?
Yeah.
And he's a very impactful player. He was very helpful to the Jazz. He's been helpful to Cleveland. Not so much last year for the Wolves, but it's the Wolves. Mm-hmm. I do think that, you know, there does become a tipping point where it's like Josh is going to be helpful. I think that that's already clear to be seen that he's going to be a helpful player, but can he be something beyond that is a big question. And it will all his pivot point will be shooting. Like, what is he? Is he good shooting?
Yeah. Yeah, or you need to construct a different team around him, like a team that basically moves continuously. Yeah. And then he will not be like, it's bad to go always back to the Warriors, but it's not that Draymond Green is shooting the basketball. Like, he's just not. And I mean, I don't think that there is any difference between Draymond Green and Giddy in terms of shooting. I mean, they are Giddy.
Same stuff.
Yeah. That can take a shot. If it's open, it may go in, but roughly it's not a shot that you want to take necessarily. Yeah. But the point is, when you have elite shooters that can move around, and that is why I was talking about Trey Mann, and probably we're offline, we're discussing about shooting. You need to have someone that bends the defense with just movement.
Yeah.
If you give Giddy that guy, even if he doesn't shoot the basketball, it's like you could already tell that in a span of a quarter, he was able to adjust to trapping a little bit more, mm-hmm. like every single time. Mm-hmm. And it was like a Gobert trapping, not like the easiest one.
Yeah.
But you could see like trying to anticipate the move. But the problem is on the opposite corner, there is either Lu Dort or Darius Bazley.
Yeah.
Not great shooters. So the defense will not leave Giddy to close out on a corner three for Lu Dort. No, for Bazley. Maybe once the pass is done, they will close out.
Yeah.
But before, no. On Bazley, they will not even bother to close out. They will just box out Giddy. So if you change this a little bit and you have Ty Jerome in that corner or Mike Muscala, you already see that the floor changes. And hey, those are average player in the league. I mean, Muscala, Kenrich, and Ty Jerome are nice player, but average player. Like, mm-hmm. get a guy that is Joe Harris and put him there with Giddy.
Yeah.
And again, Joe Harris is a pretty good shooter, but he's not an elite. It's not Klay Thompson. We are not talking about Klay Thompson or Steph. Yeah, to have, of course. But give Giddy and Shea 1-2 very, very good shooters.
Yeah.
And you will see things changing, even if the gravity of the shot is not there for Giddy.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think that's right. And the fact that Giddy can get downhill and find somebody too, like that Draymond's more of like quarterbacking from the elbow type of stuff.
Yes.
Is what he's really good at, and setting screens. And like, I mean, he does. I mean, I love Draymond Green. Like, he's very, very good offensive player and not a great shooter. Giddy's different. Like, Giddy can score. Like, Giddy can go get his own bucket and is not afraid to do so. And he can get downhill. He can pass off the move. He can pass on the break. Like, he can do just so many things. And like, it's just, and it's hard. Like, he's so hard to talk about comps with because like, you want to try to give people a feel for what we're talking about. But like, Rubio's not a great comp for him. Draymond's not a great comp for him. Even like Ben Simmons is somebody people talk about. Like, Ben's not a good comp for him either. You know, because offensively, I mean, if Ben had the mindset of Josh, like, Ben is probably still playing in Philadelphia. He would have taken that dunk. He would have done a lot of things.
You know? Oh, yeah. Like, oh, yeah. Giddy's not afraid.
Giddy is. And I love it because.
Nor was Ben. A couple of years ago, something really happened with him.
But he's never been. Josh has a, and we're going to see it more and more as we continue to go with Josh. Like, he's got like this attitude about him on the court where like he really does think he's like the man, and he's really he does his best to fit in. and really wants things to work. You know, I asked him after, I think the, well, I can't remember, was this Washington? No, it wasn't Washington. After one of, yeah, maybe it was Washington. After the game, no, it wasn't. Sorry. It was after a game that Shea didn't play. Sorry, it's all running together for me. Shea wasn't in the
Utah
lineup. Yeah, against Utah. And I asked him, you know, is it easier for you to figure out, you know, where you're at, you know, without Shea out there? Because you get to have the ball in like the closing moments of the game. And he's like, yeah, it's way easier for me to know where I'm at without him there. But he said, I want to play with Shea for a long time. And like they wanted to be a
nice
duo.
Save, Jim. Nice save.
Yeah.
Josh.
Yeah.
Really
great,
nice save.
Hey, great media training, Matt. You guys have really, you've done it. You did a good job. That was great. and Giddy, by the way, as in a quick aside, like Giddy is like such a pro when it comes to like talking to the media. Like he's not afraid in any situation. Like he's comfortable. He's confident. He knows what to do. And some of that probably comes with like playing pro in Australia and mm-hmm. his parents being who they are, like his parents being like professional basketball players themselves. Like,
yeah,
you have to be ready for all of these things, you know? But anyways, Josh wants to fit in with Shea and wants it to work and is doing whatever he can to make it work, which is, it's just cool to see. Like, it's just cool yes. to see a group that's all, they're all pulling on the same rope at the same time. And
yeah, especially Shea, I would say.
Especially Shea, which is a huge deal because that's been the question all along. It's like, is Shea going to want to stick around for this? Is Shea going to be patient enough? Like what? They're wasting Shea's career, yada, yada, yada. Like Shea could be a star player. Like if you were on Houston or something, I mean, he could average 28 points a game. Like I have no doubt yep. about that. He would rather pull back a little bit and try to fit with this group because like he wants to win a title someday. Like he wants to be
yeah.
like the one of the main focal points of a title winning team. And you know, I think that Sam and his team are doing whatever they can to make that happen. And yeah. I think that he is completely on board with what they want to do. And like wants Josh to get better. He wants Lou to get better. He wants Baszler to get better. Like he wants all these guys to get better around him, and it shows, which is it's just a huge deal organizationally. The culture, I mean, the difference between them and Houston is dramatic. I mean, we haven't even touched on the John Wall stuff. I assume that Alex and I will talk about that Wednesday. But mm-hmm. like I'm sure glad that we got to see the news, you know, come across Twitter today about, you know, Kemba not being in the rotation in New York and it not being something here, you know, where it's like, he can't play, like we can't play him here anymore, or like Kemba's mad that he's not going to get to play or whatever. Like, it's just nice to not have a mess like that yeah. here. And that they did go through with the buyout.
Yeah, OKC paid a hefty price.
Yeah. But it's better than having the media circus of the John Wall stuff now. Yeah. Like if you ask you ask Sam, like, would you rather spend this much of your cap when you're still this much under, or would you rather have some sort of media circus? Or even do the Horford thing again. Like I think that this team is just like, you know, I don't know that they feel this way or not. My guess would be that, and I would sit down and take a look at the situation and say, I don't want to do the Horford thing again. Like, I'm not going to do that again. Like, that was having to explain that away and then have it being like, that's going to stick with the team for a long time, the Horford thing. Like, it's going to stick with them for a while. It will be a touchstone that we go back in 5 years. If the Thunder are contending, we're going to be like, remember when they just sent Al Horford home because they were just done with him. Like, remember that? You know, that's, and so you don't want to, like, you'd rather just go through with the buyout and end the transaction, you know, carousel with that contract anyways. So, all right, Mikelle, anything else before we go?
Well, I'm just ready for the Christian Wood takeover tonight.
Let's do it. That Come on, Christian. You can do this. You can beat this Thunder
Christian
team.
Christian Wood versus JRE, the matchup that we all anticipated to see.
Right.
Night on November the 29th.
Oh, man. Maybe we even get to see some Dort tonight. And another great thing about this team.
Now, why do you have to make me sad thinking about Favors?
No, I mean, it's just, to me, it's still just strange. Like, acknowledge the Dort Giant Dort Thunder. Acknowledge it. Do something on social media. Make a video. Like, do something. Like, you are wasting a valuable moment in Thunder history. You're just letting it go down the toilet. You're watching it go down the toilet, and I am really mad about it. Every time that I step into the arena and there is no Dort Giant Dort video up on the Jumbotron or even an acknowledgement tweet about the two, you are wasting massive, massive resources here that are just being, it's just right there in front of you. It's easy. Grab it. Take it. Run with it, please. All right. Hope you guys enjoy these Thunder games. Enjoy your week. And we will talk to you guys again next week. Make the shirt, Andrew. Yeah, we got to make the Dort Giant Dort shirt. We could put that up on... Yeah, Brandon. Brandon Land, if you're listening. We got to make a Dort Giant Dort t-shirt. Even if it's just for me. I don't care if anybody likes it. I'd wear the Dort Giant Dort all the time. All right, let me go to the chat real quick. Got 2 minutes. John Murphy, Evan Christian, Chad Scott, The Fluky from Germany, Falk from Denmark, Dude Buffet, who's in his dad's house, Rod Gilman, Tommaso Ferrero, Nice Ike, Mike, Big Mike in Z is here, Wade Johnson 1, Alex Bullerjack is here, Brighton Schmidt, what's up, dude? Let's see. Blue Diamond Gem is here. David, Joe Mama is here. Andrew, when will we get the new intro? I'm workshopping some stuff right now. I'm hoping to have it, you know, before Christmas at least. Jack Cole, Hoopsock 69, Augusto Sarmento is here. Thanks so much. Enjoy the rest of y'all's day. Talk again on Wednesday.